Okay, it's 9 o'clock. If we could do a roll call, please.
Chair Page?
Here.
Vice Chair McAdoo?
Here.
Regent Carvalho?
Here.
Regent Levine?
Here.
Regent Moran? You have a quorum present.
Thank you. Received no emails or texts for a public comment, so we'll go to agenda item number 2 minutes. Do a motion for approval?
I'll move. This is Amy Carvalho.
Thank you, Regent Carvalho. Do I have a second?
I'll second. This is Kathy.
Thank you, Regent McAdoo. Any discussion? Okay, if we do a roll call vote.
Vice Chair McAdoo?
Aye.
Regent Carvalho?
Aye.
Regent Levine?
Yes.
Regent Moran? Chair Page?
Yes.
Motion passes.
Thank you. We've got agenda item number 3, Chair's Report. One, and once again, thank all the campuses for all the response to the pandemic and how it continues to serve this community. Very, very much appreciated. And with that, we'll go to agenda item number 4, COVID-19 update. Dr. English.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Chair Page, members of the board, for the record, I'm Cheryl Hegg-English, Director of the Student Health Center at the University of Nevada, Reno. I'm here today to share some updates about COVID-19 in Washoe County, as well as on our UNR campus. Washoe County continues to see a high number of COVID-19 cases. The total as of yesterday was 7,872 cases, with 147 deaths, second only to Clark County. Washoe County is still considered in the yellow zone, classified by the Department of Homeland Security, and as such recommends that public gatherings be limited to 25 or fewer individuals and private gatherings limited to 10 or fewer. Currently, Washoe County meets all three of the governor's criteria for elevated disease transmission. Clearly, COVID-19 continues to impact our community. However, there are some positive signs. There's been some leveling off of daily new cases over the past couple of weeks, a decrease in number of hospitalizations, and an increase in numbers of recovered cases. And in addition, our hospital capacity remains strong. Significantly, in our county, as well as across the nation, the highest number of cases is in the age range of 20 to 29, and this certainly impacts all of our campuses. Testing in Washoe County is currently accessible and available at various community sites, including at the Washoe County Health District, CVS, Walgreens, as well as some private healthcare practices. Our Nevada State Public Health Lab has been doing a phenomenal job of processing and reporting COVID-19 tests in a timely manner. In the past week, Charles Rivers Lab has also started doing some testing to hopefully take some of the burden off of the state lab. Within the next couple of weeks, the state lab will be able to simultaneously test for COVID-19 as well as the flu. And this will be incredibly helpful as we approach flu season this fall. On our UNR campus, the Student Health Center offers daily COVID-19 testing for students, faculty, and staff from 8:30 to 12:30 by appointment. The testing is done outside our facility for anyone who is experiencing symptoms of COVID-19 or anyone who's been a close contact. Since July, we have tested over 1,300 individuals. Our campuses certainly reflect what's happening in our communities, and as such, we are seeing positive cases on our campus. The university has been transparent in reporting the numbers of positive cases that have been on our campus, and these are posted daily to our UNR website without identifying data to protect the privacy of individuals involved. There's been a great deal of effort over the past few months by administration, faculty, and staff to develop policies and protocols to help promote the health and safety of our campus. Policies including mandatory face coverings while on campus, social distancing, as well as cleaning and disinfection of buildings and classrooms, have all been critical components in helping to mitigate the spread of this virus. In addition, faculty, staff, and students have all completed COVID training modules. We've had really good compliance with these policies on our campus, and our student leadership has been an important part in helping to communicate our messaging about COVID-19. Our faculty have done an amazing job of preparing teaching strategies for both in-person and remote learning. About 77% of our classes are fully remote, 4% in-person only, and the rest have a high-cluster in-person component. This has dramatically decreased the density of students on our campus at any given time.
Excuse me, Chair Page, there's quite an echo. It's really hard to hear. Could everyone make sure they're muted? Thank you.
Thank you. I was wondering if it was just my computer. So I was saying that the density on our campus has really dramatically decreased, with only about 4% of our classes in person only, 77% of our classes are fully remote, and the rest have a mixture of high flex or in-person components. This has really dramatically decreased the density of students on our campus at any given time. And no in-person classroom has more than 17 students attending at one time, and there is 6-foot distancing in all classrooms. Our residential life staff have really done a great job in putting protocols in place to help promote a safe living environment for students. Isolation and quarantine rooms have been designated for students who are ill, who have been in close contact with someone with COVID-19. We have lots of grab-and-go dining options across our campus. Although very different, our campus has made great efforts to help students feel connected and included, and Student Services continues to work hard to provide resources and support for our students. I want to close by just saying that this morning, right before this meeting, we received a wonderful email from a father directed to President Johnson, thanking him and the leadership of the university for allowing his daughter to come to campus and the experience that she's having and the growth that she is experiencing by being here in person. So I think all of the work that all of the NC campuses has done is really important, and I'll close with that. Thank you.
Thank you, Doctor. Any questions? Seeing none, we will move to the next agenda item, which is the UNLV School of Dental Medicine.
Chair Page, this is Joe Reynolds. Also, we have Amber Donnelly from Great Basin College and Adam Garcia. Also, we're planning to speak for this agenda item.
Okay, sorry about that. We'll go back to agenda number 4. We'll do Amber and then Adam.
Good morning, everybody. For the record, Dr. Amber Donnelly, Dean of Health Sciences at Great Basin College. We have a tracing team here on campus that covers both Elko County, Lander County, and Eureka. Today's case count, we're at 877 cases that we've traced so far. We have 17 tracers. Of those 17 tracers, 6 of them are faculty. Those are tracers that are either nursing faculty or paramedic. We have 7 students right now. We're going to pick up 3 additional students. Those students either are either students in our paramedic program, nursing, or have experience in an allied health field. And they've been doing fantastic. We have a couple of community members And then we also brought in an emeritus retired nursing faculty who's also doing the tracing. So we've had a pretty smooth transition. We are getting ready to move to the Deloitte system, which is being used in the South. We go live with that on Monday. That will be a much more improved tracing system, uses a lot better technology. So we're looking forward to that transition. We've also had a very, very strong partnership with the state of Nevada and them assisting us with any questions or working with us through this tracing process. We are listed in the red zone based on the number of cases that we have that are positive. Some of that could likely be related to the fact that we don't have enough testing happening in these smaller counties. We don't have the drive-through testing. And so a lot of the numbers that we're seeing are more related to positive rather than a bulk of people testing and having more that are negative. So I do know that they are looking at doing additional testing, but right now we average anywhere from 12 to 25 cases a day. We're helping manage an outbreak here in our care center and working with the state on that. And obviously the tracing on that is incredibly important. Our highest age range is just like that of what you're seeing in Washoe, which is 20 to 29. Specifically with that age range, some of the things that they've implemented, obviously on campus, we have mostly online. The classes that we do have live are going to be those things that are related to health sciences or CTE. The transition for students coming on campus, wearing the masks, using the sanitizer and doing social distancing when we can. Some of our health science programs, that's a little bit more difficult. But students have made that transition. We haven't really seen any incidents where we've had any problems with that so far. It kind of seems like people have adjusted to wearing the masks, and at least in those areas, we seem to be doing pretty good with that. We are planning to, like I said, move over to that Deloitte system. We'll be bringing on four additional tracers because we're ramping up for what could be heavier cases in the months of October and November. And so we want to make sure that we're adequately prepared for that. The students that we have that are tracing, just as a side note, part of the fact, I mean, they do get paid to trace, but we also put a scholarship component in there. And so we have at least four of those students that help us with our Spanish speaking population. Those students will also receive scholarship. And so this has been, you know, pandemic's terrible. But the positive things coming out of it are things like helping these students continue their education, allowing them an opportunity to work through a pandemic and also work with our community. It does make a difference that the people that are tracing these positive patients are people that actually live within our community. So that's all I am reporting today on our COVID. Thank you. Any questions? I would be happy to answer.
Any questions?
Chair Page, this is Regent McAdoo. Yeah. I have a question, please.
Oh, go ahead.
Good morning, Dean Dinelli. This would actually be a question for you and maybe Dr. English. I just realized that I don't have a real clear understanding. When you're saying the highest age range, 20 to 29, are you talking about just on the campuses, or are you talking about the counties in which you're referring to? Thank you.
Sure, I'd be happy to clarify that, Amber Dinelli, for the record. That is just for the county in general. So for Elko County specifically, we are a pretty good match with what we're seeing in Washoe, which is that range of just general population being higher, testing positive in that 20 to 29. And then the next increase that we see, the next larger bracket countywide, would be ages 30 to 39. And so you also have to understand that those are most likely the people that are out kind of milling around and mixing with people. And so that's where we see those clusters of cases, things like softball fields, softball tournaments, and things like that are still happening, and we'll get a cluster from that age range. So that's just an example for you.
Thank you. Is that age range the same, Dr. English, that you were referring to? That was for Washoe County, not just UNR?
That's correct. That's county data.
I just wanted to be clear in my mind. Thank you so much. Appreciate it.
Thank you. And not seeing any other questions, we will go to Adam Garcia.
Good morning, Chair Page, committee members, Regents Castro Rose, and presidents. For the record, I'm Adam Garcia, Vice President for Public Safety Services, Director of University Police Services Southern Command. Before I start with my presentation, I just wanted to address a question that Regent McAdoo just asked. Statewide, that number, that group is the highest number at about 21%. So we see that it's pretty consistent across the board in the counties as well as the state. I wanted to provide you with an update on COVID-19 developments and responses for Las Vegas and Southern Nevada. For the period March 1, 2020 through September 4th, all NC campuses across Southern Nevada reported 140 confirmed COVID-19 cases. That include CSN, Nevada State College, UNLV, DRI, and NC Southern in Southern Nevada. During this period of time, UNLV has continued to support testing valley-wide. As of last night, the university has supported over 92,000 tests, which have been conducted initially at the UNLV School of Medicine Charleston testing site, Clark County's Tropicana Garage, the Thomas and Mack Center, and the Sam Boyd Stadium test sites. UNLV, CSN, and Nevada State College, in a show of partnership, cooperation, and commitment in addressing a need and providing students with some real-world experience in a public health emergency, produced batches of a clear liquid called viral transport medium, or VTM, for the Southern Nevada Public Health Laboratory. The transport medium preserves samples from that are collected through nasal swabs long enough to get them from a collection site to a lab for testing. Other things that we've done in Southern Nevada, Nevada State College created 3D masks, and both CSN and Nevada State donated tens of thousands of masks, protective gloves, gowns, and respirators to area healthcare workers who initially were struggling with these basic needs, and I think that they're back on their feet now, but that was part of what the NC institutions here provided in continued support. In the early stages of the pandemic, DRI research teams launched two public surveys to gather information about how Nevadans were experiencing COVID-19. DRI's population health research team worked with the Healthy Nevada Project, surveying study participants who live in Clark County. And in early April, and then recently again in August, about the COVID-19 symptoms and their conditions. More than 17,000 participants responded to the DRI surveys, helping research teams better understand how Nevadans were experiencing the pandemic. Having the only cardiorespiratory program in Southern Nevada, TSM provided equipment, including respirators and ventilators, that were and continue to be critical for patients in hospitals that required respiration support. Representing UNLV, CSN, Nevada State College, and DRI continue to attend the regional policy group meetings, which are chaired by Commissioner Kirkpatrick. Assistant Director for Emergency Management Greg May also represents our Southern institutions at the Multi-Agency Coordination Center, or MAC, and he and other institutional experts from Southern Nevada assist the Recovery Steering Committee in its work, which is mostly responsible for implementing recovery functions throughout Clark County. One of the steering committee's recent contributions was the Clark County Response Plan, which was submitted as required by the governor's office, so that the state could determine the direction that we were going to go in from the county perspective. So that concludes my report. Thank you. I'll take any questions if you have them.
Any questions for Chief Garcia?
Mr. Okay, Chair?
Yes, Regional Mr.
McAdoo. I don't have any other question, but I do want to thank the three presenters. I feel like that's really good information for us to know. So I appreciate all the time and effort that you have invested in this.
Great. Hey, one question for Dr. Hug English in regards to UNR. I know they had some issues around parties and students gathering. Has that been resolved? And
so thank you, Chair Page. I think that obviously the activities that students engage in off campus are a little bit harder to control. I think that our messaging has been really strong. President Johnson sent out a very strong message prior to Labor Day weekend. I think it has made a difference. I think that we are also working in partnership with Reno police to kind of have increased patrols around campus apartments, which are not university owned, but which are close by. So I think that that's made a difference.
Thank you. Okay, with that, we're going to go to agenda item number 5, Unity School of Dental Medicine. Dr. Garcia.
Good morning, and thank you. I do have some images, yes, if you could put that up. So this is my first time I get to present before the Board of Regents, so thank you to the Chancellor, the Regents, Chair Page, and all the presidents in attendance. I am your fourth dean for the UNOV School of Dental Medicine. For those who I haven't met, I'm a board-certified prosthodontist with 35-plus years in direct patient care and 30-plus years in academic dental institutions, and if you've had a chance, I come by way of having taught in Tokyo, Colorado, Texas, Iowa, and I'm so pleased to be here at UNLV. So I wasn't following President Whitfield, but we may have crossed paths and not even known that at one point. So I'm just honored to serve as your dean, and I want to, at this beginning, extend a personal invitation for anybody's in the area. I would love to be able to show you our operations and facilities and the energy of our students. It's a phenomenal place to be. If I could have the next image, please. I do want to have a disclaimer. These are the same images I sent pre-COVID, so our whole pattern of pictures with people is so different. So please know that this isn't the same behavior we're exhibiting now, so for that reason. And as I introduce ourselves, sometimes dentistry is mistaken as pure fillings and crowns, as many of you may have experienced, but we are part of total health. And I'm so proud to be here at the beginning of a health center working with our health science deans like Dean Kahn, Dean Amar, Dean Brown, and Dean Gerstenberger. I do tell you, when we come here, when you visit, you'll see an energy and a renewal and commitment from faculty, staff, and students, and that's the energy we're working toward. Could I have the next image, please? When I think of the comprehensive review I've conducted, it's been 1 year, and half of it's in COVID, but just prior to the shutdown, I'm very proud to say we started intensive assessments of our organization, roles, responsibility, review of our strategic plan, most importantly, to be in alignment with UNLV, our parent institution. We're having a comprehensive review and analysis of our financial position to know where every dime comes from and where every nickel is spent, and looking at a multi-year financial model to make sure we're sustainable. The unique part of the School of Dental Medicine is we're an outpatient healthcare facility. So this is unique in the sense that, and I will come to COVID, we never really shut down to a point to make sure we were taking care of patients. On arrival, we also did a climate survey to get the viewpoints of faculty, our personnel, our staff, classified and clinical staff, and of our students. Again, our whole pictures would be a lot different if you saw them today. But a systematic review of HR practices as well, and really working closely now with Vice President Erica Smith to make sure our HR practices follow within the UNLV mission. And NG guidelines, we're looking at simple things like space allocation and appropriate use of space, because every square foot is so important to our operations here. I may have the next image, please. When I think of best practices, this has become even more critical in the thoughts of COVID. What people often forget is we are frontline healthcare providers. I do think our whole faculty, staff, and students were underutilized during this pandemic, and we're part of the whole healthcare team. It just, nobody really knew how to utilize us. So during this period of time, I will tell you, from March 23rd through June 30th, we screened in our emergency services, both in all the specialty clinics, over 2,200 patients, because pain goes on whether you're in a pandemic or not. And of those 2,200 patients that we screened and triaged, we treated a total of over 1,400 patients. So I'd like to take pride in our residents and faculty who continue to work. And I would like to thank Dean Kahn and Dr. Gardner, know that over 1,200 patients did not end up in the ER without a place to go to. So I'm proud to do that. And we kept everyone safe in the middle of all this. When we experienced a budget reduction in March, we really scaled back and reevaluated. But when COVID hit, there's no scaling back. You have to look at everything that must be done to support a safe patient environment. During this time, we probably extended approximately $330,000 that we had to in order to put up air handlers, check our air conditioning system, put up barriers for protection of our staff as well as our patients for a safe environment. Little things like a gown that you see the students wear and our practitioners wear. At that time, there were 40 cents a gown. The price has now gone up to $5 a gown and higher if there are some predatory individuals. So when you think on average the school utilizes 170,000 gowns, those dollars add up quickly. So we've had to be prudent and careful and wise, which is why we didn't have full operations, but we had focused strategic operations to preserve PPE in support of our medical colleagues. So during that period of time, this is where our lives changed. We created a COVID response team, and I'm proud to tell you on our administration team, we had an epidemiologist, an immunologist, and yes, we even have an attorney on our administration team to ensure we did everything to protect the safety and well-being of our staff. So for that, I can tell you, you should be proud of your School of Dental Medicine and frontline providers. Could I have the next image, please? Of course, with any school, it's mission alignment, where education, scholarship, and research and service. And education, you can take pride again that we were able to graduate our students in a timely fashion. Many of these students were going on to residencies throughout our country, and hopefully we'll get them back to Nevada. And with that, we took pride and didn't compromise the education process. Our team that had multiple people and leaders, but our key coordinator, Dean Marcia Dittmeyer, worked closely with the Commission on Dental Accreditation in Chicago to ensure every step and every change we did fell well within the guidelines for a legitimacy and integrity of the degree. In the middle of all this, as you see the images, our students were amazing. They followed rules. They stepped up, turned on a dime. The faculty turned to immediate remote when asked to. They were creative. We have outstanding set of faculty who were able to do that in the midst of continuing the education process. We were fortunate that COVID impacted us about the time of spring break, because that did impact patient care. And a large part of our budget is generated from clinical revenue. So we've been very careful. But that period of time is actually a slow period of time for us, late spring. So we're doing an analysis now to see what the cost had been. But it is costly. as part of this, you have to know the students have been in good spirits. It was difficult, if you think about it, to have reached the pinnacle of your career and not have graduation was extremely disappointing to many. So we had all kinds of, tried to support virtual events. We even had them drive up and try and take a picture in their cap and gown off the deck of our school. So we did whatever we could to support them. But again, we're hoping that somehow we'll bring them back to do a special celebration for them. If you'll go to the next image, please. When it comes to service, again, I qualify, we would never have somebody that close to a patient without a mask and all the PPE now. We're very proud being a state-supported APLU university and part of being Nevada and the whole UNLV system. Part of the pride of what we do is service to our community. We are at times the last resource for patients with lack of access to care or those who have no access to care. So in some of our philanthropy, we've been able to fund clinics that offer services to those who don't have that. So you'll see something represented, which is the for the Veterans Clinic, the Clint Farron clinics that we offer for veterans, and Saturday morning clinics. At the time, it had to stop, but it was for homeless women and children. So we are still doing that. Over the past 5 years, just as a reminder, we've provided over $31 million in under reimbursed care and free care. So we average about $6 million a year to our community, and that's just not in Southern Nevada. It's throughout Nevada, and I'll be more than happy to send to each of the regions our map of where our reach is, whether it's sealants on children and other things, because I think that's a source of pride for our community and our entire state. Next image, please. I use the term mission alignment. I really think we're not out on an island here on the Shadow Lane campus. We are tied closely to our community, to our parent university, to our NSHE regions, and to our state. The top image kind of gives you the perception that dentists were recognized for simply being kind of like tooth mechanics, and we're beyond that now. We're part of total health. We are working with patients from birth to death. I use the analogy that as a prosthodontist, I've worked with a two-day-old cleft palate baby trying to fabricate a feeding plate so the child can eat. So, yes, I've worked on people without teeth, both two-day-old and over 80s, the elder. And as far as at end of life, it's not about the end of life. It's all this in between that we're part of quality of life issues. Something as simple as eating the right elements in a nutritious meal provides total health success. There are some medical systems like Geisinger Health who understand that there's a strong connection between periodontal disease and outcomes of surgical outcomes. So many of them are insisting they have dental clearance to improve their health outcomes. So with the new medical school coming on board, we're very excited to try to tie in and develop that interprofessional collaborative practice. As I've spoken with Dean Kahn and Dean Amar and Gerstenberger and Dean Brown, we've all talked about this whole idea of coming together. And I think you can be proud at this point that many of us are working together in a better fashion, in a collaborative way, to ensure we're going to be a new center. We get to define what interprofessional collaborative practice looks like. Next image, please. Of course, it wouldn't be here without our students. This is last year, so that would be the picture this year. But just for reference, our class of 2024, which is just starting in, is a class of 85. You can state for the fact that 59% are Nevada citizens, Nevada residents, and with Nevada ties, we're up to 76%. So you have seen all my experiences in the states I've worked in, if you're from there and you're educated there, you're highly likely to want to be there in return. So whether they go for residencies and locate locally, this is what we want and this is what we're striving for. Again, I reiterate my invitation for each of you to come by. We'll give you a mask. We have very strict protocol to enter our building. We'll make sure you have mask and you'll feel safe and comfortable. You'll notice that when you see our patients, you see a mother with a child who's 5 years old and they're all masked up. If parents are willing to bring their children into an environment, we know they're feeling safe, and that's our key element, to communicate that visually and in actions. So thank you again for having the opportunity to serve as your dean for UNOV School of Dental Medicine, and I'm open for any questions you may have. Thank you.
Thank you, Dean Garcia. Any questions from the board?
Chair Page?
Sure. Use your negative.
Yes. So, welcome, Dr. Garcia. I haven't had opportunity to visit with you or speak with you. However, I've spent many years as a dental and orthodontic assistant. And so I have a real heart for dentistry. I can't help
Thank you.
So the one thing that I really just want to affirm what you said to my fellow regents. One is that I personally know protective gear and masks are not new to dentistry and other healthcare industries. So I know that you do that. I also understand the connection between oral healthcare and quality of life, which for us as regents, the important piece of that is that includes student learning. Good oral health care has a major impact on a student's ability to learn and improve their quality of life. So I was very excited to hear about all the preventative care that you're offering to the underserved populations, because that pays huge dividends throughout their life. So I cannot wait to tour your facility. And thank you very much for your presentation.
May I respond, Chair Page?
Absolutely, Dean.
Okay. Regent McAdoo, thank you. I was a dental assistant one in my lifetime, too. But I would like to point out the fact that dental hygienists have over 500 million wellness appointments in the U.S. alone. So ours is the first point of contact with the well patient who can help identify certain things. What I'm grateful to the state board and to the government in the state of Nevada, they would allow dentists to perform testing. And I think this could be a significant advantage. That's why I think we are underutilized frontline healthcare workers. So thank you again. And we'll welcome you and get you some sugary donuts when you come visit too. So thanks.
Thank you, Dean.
And I have one reply. And yes, sugary donuts are job security for.
Okay, thank you.
I get that. I also would just say to you, my very first job at probably about age 8 was dusting a dental office every Saturday for 50 cents. So I look forward to more conversations with you. Thanks.
Thank you.
Say that again.
You don't hear the person speak, but they text them. Thank you, Dean. Appreciate the presentation. With that, we're going to go to agenda item number 6, UNR School of Medicine, Dr. Swank.
Thank you, Chair Page. Good morning. Good morning to the Health Sciences Committee. Tom Schwenk for the University of Nevada, Reno School of Medicine. I have my usual brief outline that you will find in your packet. Let me highlight a few things. Under general issues, I just wanted to reinforce some of the pandemic updates. You heard already about the extraordinary performance of the State Public Health Lab, Dr. Mark Pandori as director. He also serves as chief of testing for the state and has been a close advisor to the governor. And I think the entire state has been very well served by the Public Health Lab and its leadership in a number of both service and research areas. Our Project ECHO is our telehealth project, and that service pivoted very dramatically during the pandemic to start to provide teaching to outlying areas. So they have a weekly pandemic update, a COVID update that reaches about 100 plus mostly rural practitioners of various sorts, about 60 sites around the state, and they continue to provide that service. It's very highly subscribed. Our research labs, as you know, shut down for a period of time, and since our last meeting, they've now reopened. They've done so under very strict circumstances, and I think they're following those well. Our research investigators and scientists and our staff were very anxious to get back to their labs, and it was very hard on them to have the labs closed for a couple of months, but they're thriving. We have an action team, a crisis action team that's been in place now since the beginning, continues to meet weekly. A lot of that focus has been on faculty and staff mental health and well-being, and we're doing a number of things both within the school as well as across campus and collaborating across campus to serve mental health of our faculty and staff members, and working very hard on managing return to workplace issues, trying to be flexible because of significant home stresses and childcare stresses and some of the childcare issues that come up because of school district policies. So we've been focused on that quite a bit. And finally, I'll highlight our Nevada Coronavirus Aging Network. Our Sanford Center on Aging has collaborated with the state to develop a set of coordinated services across the state for older adults. And that service has now been replicated in other states based on our experience. And I wanted to highlight that Dr. Peter Reed, the director of the Sanford Center, has testified to the Senate Special Committee on Aging at the request of Senator Jackie Rosen. So we're very proud of that. Continuing under general issues, just very briefly, we all are still waiting for the report from the federal consultants with regard to a new site for the VA Medical Center. We have some notions about what might come, but I won't get into details, but we are anxious about whether some co-location or some collaboration will continue to advance the partnership with the VA Health Center. Item C is on hold for the moment, pending further discussions with regard to our Renown integration that you will hear about when the full board convenes at 10 o'clock. So I will defer on that appointment. But under item D, I'm very pleased to announce that we have successfully recruited a new senior associate dean for administration and finance, Ms. Jackie Bernard. She comes to us from the University of Utah, where she held very high level positions, including Dean Garcia in the School of Dentistry at the University of Utah. She's very experienced in administration and finance issues, and especially in hospital and health system partnership issues, which I think will serve us well. She starts next week. Mr. Mike Herbert, who has served us on an interim basis, will continue for a bit in transition and then is going to pivot to focus more intensely on the Renown integration, which again, we will discuss next hour. I want to highlight item 1E, just to whet your appetite, that our medical students, PA students, as well as community health science students, nursing students, and social work students, so all health profession students, developed a huge outpouring of volunteer service to the community, to REMSA, to the Washoe County School District, to the Elko County Health District, and all of that added up to being selected for one of the Healthcare Hero Awards this year. These are awards sponsored by the Nevada Business Weekly magazine. I won't scoop the rest of the news, but we have other awards there as well. And finally, I wanted to highlight Dr. John Packham's service on the Governor's Patient Protection Commission. He served as the founding chair of the commission, has turned that over recently, but continues to serve on the commission, as does Dr. Tony Slonim, who you'll meet in a bit when we talk about the Renown partnership. Under undergraduate medical education, I wanted to highlight our incoming students. We're extremely enthused about our incoming class. 70 students, slight predominance of women, 36 women, 34 men, continued very high GPA and MCAT scores. But what is most exciting for us is that our underrepresented minority population has increased significantly to a little over a quarter of the class. That's a good jump for us. That plus rural students have jumped significantly, and our first generation students have jumped significantly. So our total mission-based diversity groups, which are underrepresented minorities, first gen, and rural students, are now over 50% of the class. We're very proud of that. We welcomed them with a virtual white coat ceremony a couple weeks ago, and that was another creative virtual event, very emotional, very well done, especially when the students started talking about what their white coats meant to them. I wanted to highlight the graduation ceremonies for our founding Physician Assistant Studies Program class. That's the class of 2020, graduated last week. And again, another virtual event, very positive and very exciting to see that program coming to fruition after several years of work, and then this class starting 2 years ago. And finally, under item two, I just wanted to highlight that, like all medical schools, and including Dr. Khan's students at UNLV, all of our students were pulled off of their clinical training early on in the pandemic. They've now returned to their clinical training. It was very hard on the students to be out of their clinics and hospital rotations. They're very excited to be back, and that's going well. Continuing on, graduate medical education, we have welcomed our whole class of new residents with virtual orientation of various types. We successfully placed two new residents in ELCO. We're very excited about that program. We continue to work hard in our collaborations with the Nevada Health Centers to manage our outpatient services, as well as working with local obstetricians and with the hospital to manage our inpatient services. That continues to require considerable effort, but I think it's paid off, and I think things are going better there. And we continue to be very committed to the community to serve ELCO. Under clinical network development, I'll just highlight that we opened a new medical specialty office in Northwest Reno, an office with endocrinology and metabolism specialists, diabetes and weight management specialists. We're recruiting a dermatologist to that office, and we may have other subspecialists out there to serve the Northwest Reno community. University health performance, that's our medical practice plan, our faculty practice plan. Struggled a bit, as did everybody during COVID. We're kind of holding our own, although in a mild deficit situation, but we're doing way better than we might have because of our finance team securing a number of stimulus funds and disaster loans and paycheck protection program loans. Not all of those have been booked on an accounting basis, but when they are, we'll actually be in reasonably good shape. The Moana building, our new multi-specialty primary care practice, is coming along very well. Fundraising has taken a tick upwards for the renovations. We hope to take possession of that building relatively soon following the renovations and outfit it. And then practices will start moving late this year and on into early next year. And ACO participation, we continue to work hard to participate in accountable care organizations. We have some good quality scores. We have some places where we could improve, and we hope to use this participation to improve that performance. And then finally, with regard to research, I'll just continue to highlight that we continue to succeed in securing very high profile grants. A number of investigators have hit in the last quarter on NIH grants, much to their excitement and ours. We continue to have a remarkable record of success for several of our investigators who are very highly funded. But I also want to highlight our clinical research program that has started to get some traction. We're collaborating on a convalescent plasma treatment study for COVID. We are applying to be a site for phase three vaccine testing. We're doing some longitudinal testing of COVID in our healthcare workers, and some other interesting projects coming along. So our clinical research programs are starting to take hold. And I'll defer item six, Chair Page, to the full board meeting next hour. That's my report. Happy to take any questions.
Thank you, Dean Schwenk. Any questions for Dean Schwenk? Thank you, DC. We're going to go to agenda item number seven, UNLV School of Medicine, Dr. Khan.
Thank you, Chair Page and Regents on the Health Science Committee. For the record, I'm Mark Khan. I'm the Dean at UNLV School of Medicine, and thanks for allowing myself and my team to talk about updates for UNLV School of Medicine this morning. If I can have the next slide, please. So we have at UNLV School of Medicine really continued our strategic planning process in the lens of a new dean and a post-COVID environment. Along those lines, as Dr. Garcia had mentioned, we're planning for what an academic health center should look like with our School of Dental Medicine, Nursing, Integrated Health, and Public Health. And to try to show really what value we can add to the community. One such example is we're about to, this fall, to undertake a Saturday clinic with Southern Nevada Health District's Federally Qualified Health Center, which will provide care to underserved people in our community, but also allow interdisciplinary participation with the other health science schools at UNLV. The School of Medicine has its accreditation visit in October for full accreditation. That will be a virtual visit. I've been on both sides of accreditation, but never a virtual visit, so this will be a new experience. And I've seen the documents, gone over the documents, and remain very hopeful that we get our full accreditation at the LCME meeting in the first part of 2021. We've been working at the School of Medicine to develop combined MD programs with our School of Public Health, with our business school, with our law school, with our fine arts school, and also to look to see and develop a BS to MD program. All of these we had put together at Tulane, my former institution, and we're looking to bring those sorts of things here to UNLV. Again, to attempt to attract and keep some of the brightest people in healthcare and in medicine in Nevada. We've started a scholarship and medical education working group to increase the scholarly productivity of our faculty in the area of medical education research. And we, from a research perspective, we've appointed a new interim assistant dean for research, Dr. Deb Cools, who's a trauma surgeon who's been with the University of Nevada system for over two decades. If I could have my next slide, please. For academic affairs, our class of 2024 matriculated on July 13th. So for the first time, we now have 4 years enrolled in the medical school for a total school enrollment of 240 students. We hired two new basic science faculty this past July. And as Dr. Schwenk had mentioned, clinical education activities have resumed at our participating hospitals, including UMC, our clinics at UNLV Medicine, the VA Medical Center, and Sunrise. We look forward to our first match day celebration on March 19th, 2021. We're in the process of planning for that and trying to start the traditions that will continue for UNLV Medicine for both match day and graduation. Our charter class graduates on May 7th, 2021, and we're looking forward to both ceremonies. Hopefully by that time we'll be able to gather in larger groups, but we again await to see what happens with the current pandemic. If I could have my next slide, please. Before I get to undergraduate medical education, I should mention that the groundbreaking for our new medical education building will be on October 29th of this year, the day before Nevada Day. So we are very thrilled to really see construction start on the building that will not only become the face of the UNLV School of Medicine, but also will help to transform the Las Vegas Medical District. So for undergraduate medical education, we admitted 60 students. Although we accepted more women than men, we actually recruited less women than men in the class, and we're looking to see why that's really why that is in fact the case. Our goal again is to have roughly a 50-50 mix in genders. The average GPA and MCATs of our entering class are shown in front of you, and those remain competitive. 59 of the 60 students are legal residents of Nevada, again, consistent with our mission to care for our community. If we look at groups that add value to our medical student community, 23% are underrepresented in medicine. We have 14 first-generation students, three veterans, and four medical students from rural communities. If I could have the next slide, please. For graduate medical education, we started three new GME programs, pediatric emergency medicine, geriatric medicine, and adult endocrinology. And they all welcome their first class of fellows in July of this year. Now, I should mention that there will be some shrinkage in GME from our hospital partner at UMC. So moving forward, we really need to think about how we're going to increase the supply of physicians in our state. And we are anxious to continue those conversations, because clearly we are a physician shortage state, and ideally we would grow our GME programs. New resident and fellow orientations were held virtually this year. We welcomed 110 new residents and fellows, bringing the total number of resident physicians in training from 323 to 339. And as Dr. Schwenken mentioned and Dr. Garcia, our students, our residents, and our fellows continue to be mobilized in the community to help care for our community during the current pandemic, both doing testing, providing information, doing screening, and eventually we've initiated conversations about vaccination. We're going to use the influenza vaccines as a pilot run for what we hope will be an eventual COVID vaccine that hopefully will be available by the first quarter of 2021. If I could have my next slide, please. We now have 138 full-time faculty in the School of Medicine, and we just had our third birthday. We have 548 community faculty. We've processed almost 200 new community faculty appointments. We have completed with the development, delivery, and are now revising our bylaws. We've implemented a system, an online system, to track academic productivity of our faculty. That's called Interfolio. We are very keenly aware that we want to make sure that our physicians, our faculty, our staff, our students, and residents are professional. And we've instituted a professional advocacy program, and we're beginning to track behaviors to make sure that we all behave at the top of our game. And finally, we've provided a series of workshops and training related to professional development, advancement, and communication for our faculty. If I could have the next slide. From a research perspective, again, we're just getting underway. But we had grants and contracts for the last academic year totaling $7.7 million. Those were awarded from 20 projects and trials, and three of those were COVID-related grants that totaled nearly $121,000. As Dr. Schwenk had mentioned, the majority of clinical trials are currently on hold, but we look forward to getting those underway and have reinvigorated, if you will, our relationship with our hospital partner, UMC, to develop some robust clinical trials. The UNLV School of Medicine faculty and staff are being consolidated within the Las Vegas Medical District. And again, we have plans to expand our NIH funding and expand our external support for research activities. If I could have my next slide. We've been actively involved, even in the pandemic, trying to raise philanthropic support to support our mission to care for our community. We closed our first endowed scholarship of $200,000 since we last met with the Board of Regents. We've established a white coat campaign, something that I had done at my former institution, and something that my development officer, Ms. Annette Carter, had done at her former institution, and we've already raised somewhere around $40,000, again, to support scholarships for our needy students. We've raised over $500,000 over the past 6 months, and actually since that time, we have actually raised even an additional $100,000. We're setting up a Dean's Advisory Committee. This will be a small group of individuals to help us make strategic decisions. And we've established funding ranges for endowed chairs, departments, professors. And finally, a real top goal of mine is to get someone to provide a name for our School of Medicine. And all this, again, will help the School of Medicine moving forward reach its goals. If I could have the next slide, please. So I am now going to turn this over to my colleague, Dr. Michael Gardner, the Vice Dean for Clinical Affairs and Strategy, who's going to provide an update on clinical affairs and finance.
Dean, before we go to Dr. Gardner, Chair DeBrava has a question.
Certainly. Chair DeBrava?
Thank you, Chair Page, and hello to Dean Kahn. Dean, you had mentioned in your presentation about there was going to be a shrinkage or reduction of GME at UMC Hospital. Could you just elaborate on that just a little bit?
I can. So as most members of the committee know, residency programs, by and large, are funded by CMS, the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services. UMC has been overcapped. That means that the hospital has been, if you will, paying for more residents than they are compensated by CMS. So we've been asked to decrease our complement in this fiscal crisis to try to get closer to the cap number of GME spots.
Yeah, thank you for clarifying that. And that's certainly unfortunate that one of the partner hospitals is not able to contribute like they did in the past. So we're going in the opposite direction of what we thought would happen with expansion of GME, at least with University Medical Center. So thanks for the information. Thank you, Chair.
I share your concern, Regent DeBrava.
Okay, Dr. Gardner.
Can you follow up, please?
Oh, sure. Regent Levine?
Dean Kahn, just to follow up on Chair DeBrava's question to you, for those of us who aren't in the medical profession, I know there's always acronyms with every industry. Can you just explain what you just said? Does that mean that we're losing residencies? Is that what Chair DeBrava was getting at?
Regent Levine, yes. I'm sorry about the acronyms. So resident physicians, by and large, are paid by the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services. So they provide direct medical education expenses and indirect medical expenses to the hospital to cover the costs of having residents. Because we've started new programs currently at University Medical Center, we have more residents and fellows than we have pay slots, if you will, from the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid. So because of the current fiscal crisis, we've been asked to reduce the number of resident positions that we have starting the next academic year.
By so how effect, many?
By five this year. I think what has to be realized is if we reduce five incoming residents, since residency training programs are anywhere from 3 to 5 years, that's actually multiplied over time. So over 3 years, a decline of five will be a decline of 15 residents trained in Las Vegas.
Okay. Thank you.
Chair Page, just
yes, because,
as everyone knows, an MD degree without a residency is frankly pretty useless. You can't get a license until you've done 2 years of residency at a minimum. You can't get boarded until you do a minimum of a three-year residency. That would be, for example, general internal medicine, family medicine. Many residencies, general surgery, OB-GYN, for example, are 4 and 5 years. And then, of course, one of the missions of the school was also subspecialty care. As Dean Kahn alluded to, the three new programs are all fellowships where you've already done a residency and now you're doing a fellowship to subspecialize in pediatric emergency medicine, adult endocrinology, the third one I believe is geriatrics, all of which are critical shortages. And some of which actually, I think all three of those were on the governor's grant. I think most of the regents know that the Governor Sandoval and certainly endorsed and followed up, by the current administration to Governor Sisolak to enhance GME, graduate medical education, unfortunate acronyms, undergraduate medical education is med school, that's UME, graduate medical education is after you graduated, but you have to do residency and fellowship, that's GME. We use them so often that it's it may not be intuitive to everyone. So it is, I share Dean Kahn and Regent, parentheses, Dr. DeBrava's concern. We all did our residencies. We've all done fellowships, all three of us. And we know that's exactly what we need in Nevada and in Southern Nevada to make the investment in the school pay off in the way that we all hope to enhance our physician services. So while I understand our friends across the street's concerns, many hospitals are over, quote unquote, the cap, but perhaps not as much as they are. So we're going to have to figure out some ways. And this is a national conversation. If you're interested, if you look at the Association of American Medical Colleges, the AAMC website, just yesterday, I believe it was, Dean Kahn, there was a, we've increased medical student enrollment across the country substantially. And what we haven't done is increased residency and fellowship positions to provide those graduates places to train. And now that's starting to become crisis numbers. And it's really two halves of the whole to make the whole process work. So this is, I think, a big concern to all of us because we want our students. We also, this is the last thing I'll say on this. We know that the best predictor of someone staying in a community is not where they went to med school. It's where they did their residency and fellowship. That it's almost 50% of people will stay in the community where they train. So what we don't want to happen is graduate 60 students a year who are outstanding students and have 50 of them leave the state to train elsewhere, because then it's going to be hard to get them back. So we want to make sure that there's training opportunities, you know, here in Nevada, here in Las Vegas, so our students stay, train here, and then open practice here and you know, do what we've, what we all dream of with the school.
Just one final, if I may, just one final question then, just so I understand. So the truth is, it's not just 15 residencies we're losing. It's really 15 doctors in our community that we're losing. Is that accurate?
Potentially, Regent Levine, that is correct. Yes.
On an annual basis.
Okay. Anything else from you, Novi?
Yes, Dr. Gardner is going to talk about our clinical affairs and finance. Dr. Gardner.
Okay, so Dr. Gardner, can we do this in a New York minute, please? Because we're over time already.
I'll try to be fast, sir. So the first thing I would, good morning, Chair Page and Regents. Nice to see you, although not in our normal way. I guess the first thing I want to say is we never left. UNLV Medicine has been actively involved in clinical care since day one. We didn't close a single clinic. We did see our volume decrease by 50% as people were nervous about coming to our clinics, but we never left. I'm very proud of our pulmonary ICU doctors. They're the ones that provided, and I want to emphasize this, 100% of the medical care at UMC in the ICUs and the pulmonary wards were our doctors. And their mortality rates were actually 20% less than the national average. So our doctors were providing better than national care at UMC with the sickest COVID patients. So much like when there's a fire, most of us run away and our great firefighters run to it, our people ran to the fire. And I can't tell you how proud I am of them. Last year we saw over 60,000 unique patients. We had over 170,000 clinic appointments that were completed. We saw 94,000 people in the hospital. I think if we go back to the prior slide, that's actually where this stuff is at. And that's really important because we saw a decrease in hospital encounters post-COVID because of elective surgeries being canceled, people avoiding the hospital, but we still saw we had 94,000 hospital encounters. When this slide was turned in, we had done 16,000 COVID testing. As many of you know, from March 23rd to July 31st, we had the longest continuous running curbside testing in the state. We weren't the biggest, but we were the longest continuous. We did, in 19 weeks, we did over 19,000 sample testing. We're still doing some testing. Frankly, when the guard pulled out and was hitting 115 degrees, it just didn't seem prudent to have our employees out on asphalt, even with tents. You can't make that not hot. We actually were able to get some donation to put up some billboards across town, electronic billboards, thanking our staff for the incredible work that they have done. We did implement telemedicine. because of many of our patients were afraid to come to clinic. We've done over 7,000 telemedicine appointments, and we're looking to continue that in the years to come. One of our headwinds, of our top two or three problems, probably our biggest problem, is that we're going to do for the fiscal year that just ended, we did about $6.5 million of uncompensated care, which means we have to write that on our accrual accounting as a loss. Most of that, over $5 million of that, was provided at UMC, and the uncompensated care that we provided in our clinic was often people following up after we did surgeries on them at UMC or other procedures, because it would be medically unethical to do surgery or other procedures and then not see them in the clinic environment. We have ordered a freezer, a 19 cubic feet minus 80 degree freezer. That sounds trivial. It's not. We can use that to store vaccines, particularly the COVID vaccine, as it'll require that level of a freezer, and the capacity of the state to store those vaccines is limited. We look forward to be actively involved, as Dean Kahn alluded to, the flu shots, where we may actually reopen our curbside, now that's not 110 anymore, and do vaccines, including COVID vaccines. It looks like that we're going to finish this year roughly at 2.1 million in the red. If you remember last year, we were just above 7.5 million. So in spite of the headwinds of COVID as such, we've cut our deficit by over 2/3. And actually, I was just texted this morning that for the first month of this fiscal year, we're actually in the black for the month. So we're working hard to do that. So those are now the next slide. And then the last thing I'd mention as we go to the next slide is we were giving grant funding, which we greatly appreciate from a donor. Besides buying the freezers, we're buying a COVID antibody machine so that we'll be able to not only do COVID antigen testing, which is what we've done before, but COVID antibodies. This was May 2020, because this is when the slide was turned in. At that time, the loss was $3.9 million. By the end of the year, it was down to 2.1 million. So we did see a significant drop in our volume in clinic in the last half of March, April, and May. We're back now in August. We're back to where we were about January or February. Our goal is actually to be 5 or 10% more for the coming months. But we still are seeing a little bit of reticence on some patients to come to clinic, and we're trying to make that volume up with telehealth. And I'm sorry to rush it, but as per your request, Chair Page, I tried to rush through the slide.
No, it was well done. Any questions for Dean Kahn or Dr. Gardner? Hey, Dr. Gardner, just an observation. Nice job on bringing the deficit down and being positive for the first month. It's a step in the right direction. I know you guys have worked hard at that.
Thank you. Okay. Thank you, sir.
Thanks for your presentation. With that, we're going to go to agenda item number 8, new business. Anything for new business? And then we have nothing but public comment. Just want to make one last comment. I know Dr. Kahn talked about firefighters running into the building. I know it very well because my dad's retired New York City fireman, and actually the firehouse he retired out of had the most people killed on 9/11. So it's a unique profession, and we salute them. With that, this meeting is adjourned.